great. Thanks very much, Mike, for that very interesting and comprehensive talk. I'm sure that there'll be quite a bit of discussion on it. Carla?
Okay.
Go on.
It's interesting that you haven't had any figures as to how many men is estimated to use and buy sex.
Mm.
Are there figures?
Probably.
I don't. This was on. But it seems to me the whole focus is on women and not the men who are buying sex. If laws, and we know that laws just push things underground, so if laws are pushing things underground, and sex dolls are actually reinforcing, possibly reinforcing abusive attitudes, patriarchal attitudes, then, in my opinion, the only way to deal with this is not by making it legal or illegal, is by educating our boys. You know, we've got to bring up boys, and that means men and women, got to bring up boys that do not see women as, do not have this attitude, well, you can buy sex. If a woman or girl does not want to engage in sex freely, then you've no business coercing her or buying it. So, in my opinion, we need to educate. It's education that matters. So why are feminists and why are we not, why is this not on the agenda, it would seem?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Yeah, and I didn't sort of emphasise. I mean, I sort of touched on the effects on men in terms of giving men and boys a distorted impression of women and a distorted impression of relationships. And yeah, in hindsight, I probably should have looked on the internet for a figure of the number of men who do buy sex. I had plenty of statistics in there anyway. I didn't want to make it even more top heavy with lots of facts and figures. So yeah, but yeah, I should have done it. Yeah, of course, you're quite right that educating, especially boys and teenagers and girls as well, is where there should be much more emphasis. And I think the government recognises that, and I think there's a bit more education in schools now, but yeah, certainly not enough. And not
quote from one of the sex workers. She talked about independence and then went on to show that she's absolutely totally dependent on men.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Total contradiction.
Mike.
Paddy had his
hand.
Sorry.
Oh, Paddy?
It seems to me that the difficulty here was in bringing out a social stigma around this particular work. I don't think there's much doubt, is there, that, if we get socialism, this is just going to go away. I mean, who would be a prostitute in socialism? Mm-hmm. Who would even be do a porn film in socialism? Why would you even bother doing it? So this isn't the problem that we've got, it's a problem that capitalism has got. That's the first thing. Secondly, the stigma around it obscures the fact that this is wage work, like other work. If you think about this, it's when you go and get your hair cut, somebody's using their body to do a service for you, you go away for satisfaction. Take it a step further, you're talking about massage, take it a step further, you're talking about sex work. The question is the person's body a commodity in itself, or is the person using their body to provide a service just like massage, just like hairdressing? Now, I think if we as socialists can't quite see the division between those two things, then we're going to get ourselves confused. It seems to me that what's happening here is that sex workers are using their bodies to provide a service that is stigmatised by society, but in every other way, it's like other services that workers do. And so what I think that we have to do is say, well, look, what is our sort of ethical position on this? We don't think this would exist in socialism. It's not something that any worker should have to do if they don't want to do it. But we can also recognise that some workers may choose to do this. Some workers certainly do choose to do this because it's quite good money compared to other options. So I think that the idea of criminalising the buyer in a transaction that is otherwise legal seems a bit upside down. It seems like legal entrapment. So blaming the buyer or blaming the seller in a capitalist transaction, the blame part of it doesn't help. I don't think it helps clarify issues either.
Right. Need any mic?
Just throw a couple of things in, really.
All right.
Right, OK, well, obviously the emphasis on the context of patriarchy and the sex industry in terms of women, I understand that entirely, but there is a minority reflection of that amongst gays and lesbians, especially in the said context of the sort of what you call the development of the pink economy, or if you know what I mean. And in terms of attitude and use and alienation and objectification, it exists exactly, or more or less exactly in the same way amongst gay and lesbian people as well. So it's not. So there is a big problem there in terms of human beings being able to express free sexual relationships with each other without them being impacted by either commodification or class. So, and just in terms of class, just a couple of little things just to throw it in, but I don't know if anybody saw the recent Oscar Wilde biography. It's very good, but although it's from a previous era, it is quite interesting in illustrating the relation between, in the context of homosexuality and homophobia, in terms of how it's treated differently in different classes. It also has something to say about the origins of the term rent boys, and how that's come about, and the imbalance of power, obviously, in the context of those with wealth or part of the establishment, and the average poor working class boy in that context, but also how homophobia cuts across classes as well in terms of prejudice and its impact, and in this particular case, if you like, the revenge of the establishment against one of their own in the way it was treated. So there's that. And just one other thing, some people, I mean, I haven't watched the later series, but a lot of people will probably have watched the first series of Humans, which was on the television, and I thought that was quite good in some ways, and also in terms of the female human robot, whatever you want to call them, in the family relationship in that context, and the how it illustrated the problems within the traditional family, if you like, in terms of the male's situation and their self-image of themselves, and their ending up having sex with a robot. Because the whole thing, this and those other aspects, what they illustrate is the problem with human beings generally to struggle with having free sexual relations between men and women, or men and men, to be honest. Or, it's a really big problem area. And I mean, if you think, it goes right back to, for all these other peculiarities, earlier, you know, Reich and the other people were trying to look to the sexual health movement within the socialist movement in Germany, and it was a big issue, and it's come out of some of those big radical periods in history when everything was thrown up in the air, whether you put in Germany or in the Russian Revolution, when everybody tried to tackle it. Freedom and openness to be able to talk and deal with these things is part of the problem. You will not get all of that here, of course, and I'm not going to give you all of it in terms of my personal traumas of the past, good and bad, you know, either. And that is part of the problem, of course. You know, the early women's liberation movement, when they set up women's consciousness-raising groups, one of whom, of course, got expelled from your organisation, but that's another matter. You know, that was an attempt for women to bring a lot of that out into open in the context of discussions that were not, you know, it wasn't about, you know, I'm better than you, or you're, you know what I mean? It was a process, a safe process to discuss. It's very difficult to do that in the context of trying to carry out political analysis at the same time. But one could interact with the others, and was an attempt, has been an attempt by men's to do the same thing, because it found it very difficult for men and women in practice to have that kind of open, non-judgmental discussion. Can't say it was that except they've been that successful. And that says something about men in particular, that they haven't been able to achieve those benefits through the same sort of processes. So I'll just throw that in, really.
Yeah.
Ian?
Sorry? What's your opinion or your take on the different cultural influences? I'm thinking particularly of Fletcher Christensen, can't get him back on the farm now that I've seen Harry.
Say again, sir, I didn't catch the last
one. Christensen was the ship when I went there, and the women were given sex freely.
On the island.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not something I know about, I'm afraid. I suppose there are.
It's a different attitude to sex in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For, you know, sex is free, is it totally different? You travel to different parts of the world, it's totally different attitudes towards sex.
That was a film, wasn't it, anyway?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Fletcher Christensen, they didn't get back on the boat, did they? Mutinied. They killed the captain because they
were
living in
the
other
Yeah, I suppose. I did try to sort of mention sort of other countries, especially European ones. Almost my sort of focus was on more on sort of Europe and the West. But yeah, I suppose the culture is quite different overseas. And but there's the impression, isn't there, that especially in sort of places like Thailand and those areas, you get lots of sort of sex tourists, which are sort of wealthy European men who go over there specifically for.
That's in the modern day. I'm talking about the South Sea Islands.
Oh,
Where the British Navy went out there, and they were so taken by the different attitude to sexuality that they didn't get back on the boat and mutiny.
Oh, I see.
And furthermore, I mean, what's your take? You're talking about patriarchal societies. What about the impact of matriarchal societies, in particular the impact of West Indian culture, where there's absent fathers?
Can't say I sort of looked into that angle on it, so I don't really sort of have much to add on to that, I'm afraid. Yeah, but that's an area I didn't really look into. Maybe I should have done.
Keith?
Yeah, it's just the point that connects with what Paddy was saying. It sounds to me that there was a bit of a turnaround in the talk. In the early stages, you were raising the idea that there might be significant differences between sale of Lady Baron Gemma and prostitution, because of its use to do penetrating bodily boundaries and so on and so on. Then right at the end of the talk, it sounded to me as if you were suggesting that there weren't any significant differences between those different forms of selling labour. I'm not sure how we would trace out the consequences of each of those positions, but am I wrong to detect that kind of tension in what you're saying?
Oh, yes, sorry, maybe I didn't make myself clear. I was quoting that the Canadian group Feminist Current argue that that there is a difference between sex work and other sort of waged or salaried labour. And my point which I made after that is that that they are fundamentally the same, because the economic mechanism behind the two is the same, and the and because the economic mechanism is the same, then it's less important or less fundamental whether the commodity is a manufactured item or the commodity is a person. Because it's sex work is a more sort of extreme kind of paid labour, then it's got other implications for people's self-perception, identity, status, and everything. I'd say that they're sort of side effects of the kind of paid labour it is, rather than being fundamental to it. So, yeah, sorry if I didn't make myself clear on that point, but I'd say that, yeah, because the economic mechanism of buying and selling, owning, not owning, is fundamental. Therefore, it's sort of the same, regardless of whether or not it's a manufactured item or a person which is being bought and sold. Yeah.
Sibeli.
I think it's a youthful.
No, Sibeli, you had your hand up. Will you feel?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Will you contribute?
Okay. A very good talk, Mike. It's very interesting as well. I just would just like to mention the woman as well. It's not only a sex slave, but as well as an artist, a life drawing, and I realized that. I found that kind of is this a kind of industry, a kind of very interesting and kind of very exploited of women and especially women's body. Generally, this is apparently it's much more women posing as a for life drawing than actually as a man. And then as well, and it's always generally it's the other way around. We've got the woman posing, and we've got the man drawing and doing the painting. And I can see the kind of a relationship between when you do propaganda and women's and magazines and everything, which I found as well a bit of kind of glorified prostitution. I just would like to see, like to know what you think about it. Just when you think, because of course when you can put a woman as just as a prostitute or a sex worker or whatever, but you have to understand that women as well are there doing a pseudo prostitution, but just being more glorified and just a bit not looked as you can have models and you can have prostitutes, and that is kind of, it's okay. So I really like the talk when you say second class workers and things, and yes, I think the political and socialist approach to these things I think is quite relevant.
Just quickly on that, I suppose the word sort of model is often a euphemism for sex worker, isn't it? You know, you might see, you know, an open doorway with a staircase going up to it and a sign saying models upstairs, and everyone knows what it means. But I realise that's not quite the same as life drawing. I mean, I don't see life drawing as inherently exploitative. But as you say, if it depends on the motivations for people going along to life drawing classes. And I would have thought that if you had two life drawing classes going on next door to each other, one was a male model and one was a female model, I can guess which one would be more popular for people to go along under the pretense of drawing. Good point. Yeah.
Bill. Yeah. Okay.
Just a couple of points.
Howard.
Yes, I know. Go on.
An interesting emergence in the US of the incel movement, if anyone's heard of it. It's short for involuntarily celibate. And it's part of the kind of wave of misogyny that's coming out of the incel there. And there was at least one, I think, recent spree killer was an identified incel. But there's an element of this, apart from, you know, just the general misogyny, of I think that some people on the right try and use this sort of argument show that socialism will be awful because they say, well, all fails, but they go because you won't get the girl. There'll still be competition over sexual partners, and therefore there'll still be all this rivalry and competition among men. And the incel movement also try and get this line of, well, sex is a need, so we should have our need for sex serviced in just the same way. I mean, up to any point, including that therefore women should be compelled to provide that service for them, and you know, if we have a society too much according to their needs, that's their need. But they seem to miss that means that obviously that they will have to service the needs of gay men as well, and they might be called upon. But I think that's interesting in that there's this wider point that it's not just about the actual physical and practical application of the acts of prostitution, but of the whole relationship. Of the idea of having a sort of serving class of women and the whole relationship, even of the men who don't use prostitutes, who think it's fine. I mean, I think that, to be frank, that the clients of prostitutes are a species of rapists. I mean, they are totally unconcerned about the volition of the woman. All they're concerned is about gratifying their own desires. And just finally, on the Northern Ireland thing, I think when they passed that law, the police turned around and said they wouldn't enforce it. Mm-hmm. They practically said that they're just not going to be bothered with this. So that's I don't know if that's an interesting cultural thing or not. I mean, they say that, look, we haven't got the resources to actually police this effectively. But there was an almost a reaction of, well, a refusal to see the flyers as a species of equipment.
Howard?
Just comment on what Paddy said. Paddy seemed to be equating somebody going to have a haircut or somebody going to have a sort of non-sexual massage with the kind of service that, you know, you get when you go and see a prostitute. And if you don't mind me saying so, I think that's a bit ludicrous. I mean, you know, somebody giving you a haircut or a non-sexual massage doesn't suffer the same degradation, the same humiliation as somebody who, because they see no other choice, and the vast majority of prostitutes don't see any other choice, suffers when a complete stranger goes to have sex with them. I mean, I go to a local hairdresser where I live in Swansea, a woman called Susan. She's got a nice little sort of hair salon. I go there. She gives me a haircut. We have a nice chat, and I give her £10, and she's not in the least humiliated or degraded, and I don't feel I'm humiliated or degraded. Completely different things. In a socialist society, you'd still have people going for haircuts. You wouldn't be paying for them, obviously. You might well have people going for non-sexual massages. You wouldn't have people going to prostitutes. There wouldn't be any. They wouldn't need the money. So I don't think you can reasonably equate these things. You can maybe equate them within capitalism to a certain extent, but even then they're radically different. But the implication of that is that you'd still have these things in socialism. You wouldn't. You'd have completely different mindsets.
Yes, I've seen you. You can put your hand down. You can put your hand down, Kevin. I've seen you, and I've got you on the list.
I've put you up a few times, and you've ignored me.
I've seen you, I've recognised you, I've got you on the list. Now, well, just kindly wait your turn.
You're so kind and generous of you.
Look, I'm chairing the meeting.
Well,
all right? Yeah. I've noticed you. Just wait your turn.
I'm sorry, man.
Celeste.
I didn't think to correct him, obviously.
No, I don't want you to defer to Kevin. You speak, Celeste.
I wasn't doing a feminist.
Celeste?
I was just going to give one question for Mike and then another question for after my speaker. The question of, I should link my question to you, which Carla did at the beginning. Because when you talk only women being as a sex worker or as a prostitute, this was the society called, I know I missed it at the beginning. So my question is did you come across with the figure as a voice, as a prostitute as well? Because I know there is, but I just call women as boys are as well, because they have their needs, they don't have enough when they, especially when they're young. Yeah, that's the first thing. And as was she said, I was wondering, he said, in the socialist society, we don't have this. But then my question, linked with Kikana said, we have to educate our boys. And then in my mind came out, how the school look like in the socialist school, and how do you deal with the energy of sex?
Cold showers.
You can't point fingers.
I know it's a little confusing because I think in Portuguese it's still, sorry.
Oh, right, yeah. So correct me if I've misheard what you said, but you said how do you account for sort of the energy? Did you mean sort of like the motivation?
If you came across with this, any statistics about the figure about the boys,
oh,
and
right,
it's probably as sexual, because they are, isn't it? I don't know in England, but I know in my country they are. They can sell their body too, so it's not only girls. The girls talk more about it, and the boys maybe later on, you can see the things in Ireland about mostly the priests. But in the street, still happening in many countries, the boys don't have the job or ever to buy drugs or even a beer, and then they will sell the body too. But when you talk about the regulation in this country, just what I understand is just go as a woman. But in fact, there are boys as well involved in the sex industry, or you didn't come across any figure.
Oh, right, yeah. I suppose to sort of come back on that, I think maybe you're out of the room because it was near the start of the talk, but yeah. Up until... Yeah, up until 2009, the legal terminology common prostitute sort of legally only referred to women rather than male sex workers. And that was sort of decided in only about 25 years ago. So the law at that time put less emphasis on male sex workers. I mean, where I used to work in the homeless sector, the homeless hostel where I worked was right next to an area which was frequented by male sex workers, and some of those lived in the hostel. And the impression I got was that a lot of men who buy sex from other men were maybe in unhappy marriages, and that was their sort of outlet for their other desires, which, because the marriage wasn't, how can I put it tactfully, sort of closeted gay men or closeted bisexual men who, wanted sex with other men, but that was the only way they felt they could get that. I mean, that's sort of anecdotal. I don't have sort of figures, unfortunately. I suppose the other figures I've come up with is that, between 10 and 15% of sex workers are male. And in terms of the number of male sex workers, I was thinking of quickly seeing what Mr. Wikipedia or Google had to say about it. But again, right at the beginning, it was a sex worker had an average of 25 clients a week. And if there's nearly 73,000 sex workers, multiplied by that by 25. I don't know if anyone's better than maths than I am. That would be, again, it's just an estimation, but that would be the number of transactions. I suppose it's going to be in tens of thousands at the very least, number of men in this country who purchase sex. Yeah, but that's sort of off the top of my head and with some, vague maths.
Kevin.
Thank you, Dad. One of my frustrations out of my end on this, without disrespectful, is I think some of the questions are actually speeches and they're meandering. I get a bit frustrated by that. Now, so I'll try and be brief. What I want to talk about or ask questions about the party is about marriage. Because I'm narrowing this down to man and woman at the moment. I don't want to cause any offence there, but I am. And so what I'm asking is marriage a form of prostitution?
Can't be.
That's it, sure. That's all you need to do. You don't need to start rambling, respectful.
Yeah. Oh, if I could. I suppose if I could quickly come back on that. I mean, the quote I gave from the sex worker, where's it gone? She said in her view that the only difference between sex workers and non-sex workers is the illegality of it. So I think in her view, any relationship would have some kind of sort of transaction, for argument's sake. But I think that the sort of the history of marriage was sort of traditionally about women being men's property in a sort of a contractual way, sort of reinforced by the church and the state. I mean, that's not to say that that's the reason why people get married, but it's the sort of the foundation behind it. There's a bit about that in the publication that I'll dish out at the end, so I'll save my breath and let you have a read of that. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, there's that sort of financial transaction aspect to marriage, which is sort of skirting around prostitution.
Carla.
Just responding to Paddy's point earlier, we know, or we're pretty sure, that this is not going to happen in when we get a socialist society or post-capitalist society. But this is always the magic bullet, isn't it? I mean, we need to deal with certain things in the meantime. And it's how we deal with those things that I think matter at this point in time.
Did you want to come back, Mike?
I think the thing about marriage was in part, I was going to say, about financial relationships and power relationships, the two go together, don't they? And marriage, it's still part of that now. I don't think it's just about history and, the church and all that. If I could just mention something else, though, because I brought this about, I was talking about sexual health as a political thing. But did anybody, I didn't hear the programme, but I saw this, I picked this out of the Radio Times, and it was called The End of Sex. the Japanese are growing tired of sexual intercourse, and they're not the only ones. And he went on to talk about Italy and compare rates of the numbers of the decline of men and women engaging in sexual intercourse, and also related to something I mentioned before about the decline in the birth rate in Italy, despite it being a Catholic country and all that. But it wasn't, I'm not going to read you the whole article, but it was very interesting because it did, in Japan in particular, it came back to the fact that it was men and women. It was men and women were not engaging till very, for like 20 years sometimes, And a lot of it went back to work, regular work, overwork, all the pressures and the stresses of work for both the men and the women. The men, of course, being men still, their interest was going along and not having sex, mind, but going along to these bars where women were dressed as though they were still schoolgirls, and dancing and chatting with them. No sex, mind you. No sex in most cases. That's a weird thing, isn't it? But that, I just think it expresses some of the kind of, deterioration in the relationships between men and women, and the impact of modern capitalism, both in terms of work and in terms of the pressures of commodity and commodification of relationships, right across, not just about sex.
If I could come back on that.
You want to say something else?
Yeah, just quickly on what Mike said.
Just
quickly on that one, the sort of the decline of sexual activity. I wouldn't be surprised there's a correlation between that and the increased availability of pornography as a substitute. I mean, on my little phone here, I can, just by typing something to Google, I can get, whoever knows what on my phone, they're ready for me to watch or look at. Whereas, of course, in the in previous decades, I had to go along to a CD news agent, look the shop assistant in the eye as I handed over money for a copy of a whatever magazine. So I suppose the availability of... so I suppose the easy availability of pornography might have something to do with the decline.
This is men being losing their macho role to some extent, though. They're actually afraid. They don't know how to approach women at all. It's given up on it. And they, yes, you're right about pornography, all the similar equivalents. When they say people aren't having sex, of course, a lot of these people will be having sex in this case. They'll be masturbating to pornography or whatever, men and women, let's just be clear about this. The thing about sexual need, yes, human beings do have a sexual need. We do have to be able to express it, hopefully in a positive way, in human relationships. But a lot of that is denied, and then people find other ways of dealing with it. But for that just struck me how bad things have really got.
Hold on a minute, Joy.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a word about Japan. I don't know if anybody saw Japan's Shame, a documentary that was on TV 2-3 weeks ago. A young Japanese journalist who was an intern in New York was taken out for a meal by a very prominent Japanese politician. The upshot was he raped her. It was date rape. He got her very drunk, etc. She went public with this and was absolutely reviled because it was deemed in Japan to be all her fault. And suddenly she started this campaign, and all these girls, young women, came out of the woodwork to claim that they also had been raped, because it was so shameful. People were shunning the families of these girls. The sisters were being reviled as if they were tainted, etc. So, to a certain extent, it's a counter-argument to what your article's saying. They're not having sex. No, they're going around raping girls because they can get away with it.
Well, that happens everywhere, though, of course.
Well, it happens everywhere.
Me too. We were talking about it yesterday, weren't we?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up that argument to what's happening in Japan, that there is this heightened rape that isn't being reported.
Margaret?
Well, I was thinking about having sex is the big issue, isn't it? But rarely do you hear talk about lovemaking, which obviously incorporates sex. So I can understand why people don't always want sex, but lovemaking is a bit more about a nice sort of persuasion, getting you in the mood. And as you said, it's all modified now. Sex is used for all sorts of stuff to sell us.
Paddy, did you want to come back?
I just wanted to come back a little bit on some of the, particularly what Howard said. I think maybe Howard, maybe I didn't express it very well, but I think what I was trying to say was, I'm not saying say prostitution is like going and getting a haircut, because that would be ridiculous, but it's a painful service. It's on a gradient. Now, what that gradient does is it disappears at that point behind a cloud of moral condemnation. So we can't really see whether it's actually the next stop along the line, or whether it's a categorically different thing. The website you posted, the feminist website you posted, thinks it's a categorically different thing, that you yourself become the commodity, as opposed to you yourself are a worker who's producing commodities. I was simply saying that it probably is just the same thing. In fact, I'm echoing what you said also in your talk. It's another stage of wage work. It's not, and the condemnation obscures the fact that we shouldn't be joining in this moral condemnation. We should simply say, well, it's a transaction that almost certainly won't occur in socialism, because nobody will choose to do it. And in fact, evidence for that comes from things I've read recently. There was a BBC story about 4 weeks ago, something like that, of a former policeman who runs a brothel in somewhere in Britain. The police know all about it. They could break up the brothel. They could arrest him.
His name Mr. Lawn on
as a running brothel. That is illegal. Being prosecuted is illegal. What he does is illegal. The police leave him alone because they know that if they broke it up, all the women would be back on the street, they would be in more danger. So they're better off where they are, so everybody keeps quiet as it. And the women in the brothel say it's much better being in this thing, it's much more prison site, they get much better rates, there's no mistreatment, there's no risk because the other people are there. And they also ask about the sort of clients they get. And if you imagine these are sort of desperate, old, lonely men, not at all, these are young city types. Good-looking men with flashy cars and loads of money, who are busy working in the city. They don't have time. They don't want to get into settled long relationships. I mean, you can make the value judgment you like about that. But they're young. They're active and very confident. And this to them is another type of service, a sort of elite service. Okay. Now, what do you think about that? I think we've got to keep our heads on and be rational about how capitalism works its transactions, and just expect it's just something else that won't happen in socialism.
Dave?
Mike, do you think that capitalism created or responded to female sexuality? We have on our bookstore a book under a black lace imprint, which is erotic literature written especially for women. I've never read it, but I mean, I've got friends who tell me that, what was it, 50 Shades of Grey, which apparently is a very boring book, but you know, I mean, that the audience for that was specifically women. I'm under the impression that if you go on to a popular or any popular porn website, that there will be a section under whatever you particularly like, but there'll be porn for women. I'm told that women's magazines, Cosmo's the only one, I mean, the first one that comes to mind, is magazines like that are filled with articles about sex for the readership, whether they be young or whatever. So, but from a capitalist point of view, I mean, obviously there's a profit to be made in it, then, you know, you go for it. But I mean, you know, do you think, was this something to do with the 60s when, you know, women apparently allegedly became more liberated, or, you know, is it something that's occurred later?
I think the whole 50 Shades of Grey thing, I mean, I haven't seen the film and I haven't read the book, but I think it came out about 5 years ago, and it was, you know, it was sort of quite heavily promoted. It was quite, you know, it was a big seller. And I think it was packaged or marketed as empowering women because it, you know, because it's, you know, erotica written by a woman, aimed at women, and it was, you know, much more mainstream, bring it all out to the open, being more open. But I think the reality behind it is that, again, I haven't seen it, so I don't know 100%, but the woman character involved gets involved in an S&M relationship where she's very much the victim. I don't know if anyone has read it. Yeah, so it's sort of glamorising abuse, but in a very mainstream way, which I think is quite worrying, how that was sort of... And there's this huge bandwagon. I mean, that book's sort of riding on that bandwagon because the design of the cover is very similar and everything. And I think it was all just one big marketing trick to claim that all of that sudden... what's the word? Sort of mainstream of a particular branch of pornography was somehow empowering, but it really wasn't. It was just a money-making scam. I mean, that sort of comes and goes in waves. In the early 70s, you had Porno Chic, it was called at the time, where in the kind of films that only a few years ago would have only been played in seedy little backstreet cinemas were played in mainstream cinemas like Deep Throat and, Emmanuel. And again, at the time, it was seen as, you know, being more open, being more European, being more, you know, liberated. But it was just another sort of marketing trick, I think, that if you bring something to the mainstream, obviously it widens the audience, therefore it rakes in the cash a bit more. That's my take on it.
Yeah. Ian?
Yeah, what's your take on the what I would say the apparent contradiction in terms? I'd highlight as an example Samantha Fox, that now she's getting older, is talking against being a page three girl, just her for one. The fact that British girls abroad, not all of them, but many of them on holiday, have got appalling names of their sexuality. You know, I've been to places like Ayia Napa and Cabos and seen the behaviour that goes on, and that's certainly not men putting those girls to that. And I saw in a recent newspaper article, the man that offers to pay for a woman on a date is going to be regarded as a sexist, but a man that doesn't pay is undateable.
Mean.
Not sure what to say on that. I think you, how can I get it right? I mean, I think with the sorry, what was the first bit? I'm just stalling to give myself more time to think.
Three girls.
Samantha Fox,
and there's many of them. In fact, I've just noted Sam Fox. Yeah. There's another girl, I can't think of her name, but she's now bald. And she's always on the right program, decrying, you know, the exploitation of women, and yet they've made a fortune by being page three girls, etc. Now, in their later days, they're decrying it. And the other point I made was about British girls, not all of them, abroad, on holidays, and the disgusting way they carry on.
Yeah, well, I suppose with the people abroad thing.
Misunderstood men's position. Yeah. Men are liberated and they're not. And they behave like men now.
With the people going abroad thing, I suppose whether or not you're a man or a woman, if you're going abroad on holiday, there's that sort of release, isn't there, in that you are. In that, you know. You know, what happens in Ibiza stays in Ibiza, kind of thing.
Not all male oppression, is it?
No, I wouldn't say it was, but again, there can be that double standard of men being perceived as studs, whereas women being perceived as sluts. There is that kind of double standard, and again, you could say that the whole who pays for a meal on a first date thing is not the same kind of double standard, but a particular one. I'm not quite sure what point to make from that one without getting into sticky mud. So I'll leave it there. Yeah, sorry, Ian, you've flummoxed me on that one. not while this is recording, I'm not. Yeah.
When was the last time you paid for a meal with a lady?
She wanted to split the bill 50-50.
Come off script and give us a few. To split the bill because she's not made up her mind whether you're attractive enough.
I wouldn't be surprised at that.
And where can you buy these plant mannequins in Perth? The other question is, how do you pump them up?
Okay, anyone else?
I'm ready for women.
Did you want to come back, Margaret?
I just wanted to say, I really feel that women, younger women, I'd say, have missed the boat at all. They think that equality is like being like men, and it isn't, is it?
Yeah.
They behave like men, to their detriment, I think.
Bill?
Yeah, just briefly, back on the technology thing, because the sex dolls, there's the more disturbing possibilities involved, because of child sex dolls, and the implications from that. And also, there's been a relatively recent breakthrough in video technology that can now almost invisibly map a face onto any other piece of video. And the first thing that happened with that, obviously, was they took the faces of film stars and mapped them into pornography videos. So that the technological aspects of it there'll be lots that it's going to be very difficult for us to handle. The idea of someone buying a sex doll that looks like a famous person or that is of some taboo character and then possibly even promotes that sort of behaviour. And then any video that can be imagined will be able to be created, and there'd be absolutely no way of stopping them.
Just quickly on that point, similar point really, but I think with some of those the more sort of high-end expensive sex dolls, you can get them sort of made to your own specifications, and the next step on from that is getting that to look like a real person. Because if a sex doll looks like no one in particular, then it's one thing, but if it looks like someone specific, and presumably a man would be acting out their fantasies aimed at someone specific because that's the face they've had the doll designed as, then that's a different sort of kettle of fish, isn't it, really, I think.
Kevin.
Yeah, just an inquiry. Do you know, I mean, since you're talking about these sex dolls and whatever, do you know if they come along with paracetamol in case they get a headache?
Richard.
Yeah. Can I raise a serious point? You haven't touched on the social effect on women of sexual repression. The idea that the working class, their consumption of anything is restricted, deliberately restricted. And in my vast experience with women, I'm no sex cult, but I have a bit about it. I've actually found women are as interested in sex as men. That's my experience. But for being repressed, some of being repressed, they don't believe this. Until they can be sexually awoken, then they are as desirous of sex as men. You haven't touched on sexual repression in women.
This is far too much information.
Sorry, you're embarrassing.
Celeste.
In the political point of view, I would like to know my points of that. Where Sharia law is 100%, apparently there is no prostitution, because the men can say to the women, I marry you. Doesn't matter how old the girl is, take home, have sex. After that, they say, I divorce you. And the story, no prostitution. Is there any connection of capitalism, socialism, or something else?
I suppose just quickly, I'm guessing that sort of predates capitalism possibly, so it's more to do with property relations rather than sort of property relations almost literally, really, isn't it? It's sort of a play on words, it's that kind of contract, you know, which is reinforced by a religious ideology. It sort of reinforces that men feel as if they can own women, and within those contracts, within those ways of doing things, probably do own women. So I'd say that's a sort of a property relation, and not necessarily just a capitalist one. But I'll take your point that's a way of something happening and it not being called prostitution. But it's sort of similar kind of thing.
You've not dealt with the sexual repression.
I sort of mentioned it a bit by mentioning rather than going into much detail about advertising, for example, sort of expresses women's sexuality in a particular way, sort of filtered through the markets, filtered through presumably sort of male advertising executives over the years. So the sort of the public image, if you like, of women's sexuality has been one thing, largely moulded by men, and in a particular way. Yeah, I sort of didn't go into too much detail about the repression side of it. I think it's done in a different way now compared with, you know, since compared with before the 1960s, say, because of the cultural changes.
My mother's generation might have a completely different view of sex than most girls today. Most girls are far more liberated in their sex than their grandmothers and mothers were. Well, there's not been a physical change in
women. Field, is that?
Dougie.
Yeah, you haven't touched on the attitude of religion as on sex, or whatever, you know, the Christian religion, the Muslim religion, you know, what the views are about sex and, you know, adultery and all the sort of things that they talk about, and the nature of marriage coming out of religion. And just the fact that religion often makes people feel guilty about sex and stuff like that. And, you know, even homosexuality, there's stuff in the Bible about gay sex not being right and things. And you've got the attitude of people who are religious, who are homophobic and things, you know, because of attitudes in the Bible and Muslims. I know a Muslim guy who's gay or whatever, you know, and he has terrible problems with his sexuality, telling people who are of the same religion, really. Yeah. So religion has an effect on people's attitudes about sex, really.
Yeah, you're quite right. And when I was doing some of the reading for it, when some of the laws against sex work came in, I think it was the 1820s, that came in through sort of pressure from, you know, sort of Christian groups. And again, I think at that point, especially sort of further on into the 19th century, I think we were talking about it yesterday, about the whole notion of sort of respectability being a big part of Victorian culture. I think that was something we were talking about last night, wasn't it? And it was sort of that respectability. Obviously, it was all a facade. There was lots of things going on behind, but it was sort of that sort of religious front, if you like, which was reinforcing sort of certain moral values around, especially sort of throughout the 19th century. And yeah, I mean, I don't know the details regarding Islam, but again, it's an old ideology which is still having, you know, an effect today, and it hasn't moved with the times in terms of greater acceptance of gay people, because there's that sort of inertia that goes with religion, is it? Because it's based on ancient texts, it's the idea of eternal truth, and of course, culture, you know, attitudes and values change when religion resists that, because it's supposed to be something which never changes.
Yeah. Sabelli.
Okay, yes, just a little hint. Yes, I agree with... I forgot her name, I'm sorry.
Maggie.
Yes, I think you talk about love and sex, and I think it's a really kind of good point. And I really like the book of John Berger as well, when it's called The Ways of Seeing.
Brilliant,
yes.
Yeah.
And they just portray that they kind of try to explain how women are banal, it's the banalization of relations and kind the image of the woman. So I think, yes, you will just became, this is all about profit and things, so relationships itself just end up just lost to consumptions and imagery and self, you know, fulfillment. So that's just how I would like to kind of people haven't read John Berger's or John Berger Ways of Seeing. It's a really good way to kind of look at this point of view of, you know, the women and as a product, as objectify, and now as things. And another thing I'd like to say, most of it as well has to do with pedophilia as well. You have to remember as well, many women and men and kids, whatever, not have access to education, to a kind of family principles and things, and end up on the being abused, and then that's another way that is kind of this trait just keep caring, and people just accept it as a kind, is a normal thing. But no, it's not social. I don't think
is more abuse of relationships and things. That's what I think.
No, I'm British man.
Okay. Carla.
Okay, I just want to say that I think we live in a highly sexualized society, and I think we're pretty confused as to what is normal and what isn't normal. Most people, probably men mainly, think they're probably not getting enough. Some people think they're getting too much. I think we should look... We'll never know what's normal and what is kind of natural for us as humans in our relationships. And I think we need to look at simpler societies and hunter-gatherer societies. And, you know, they're not having sex all the time. Although it is a big part of their ritualised behaviour, you know, they don't have the stimulus that we're having. They don't have the advertising. They don't have the standards of morality that we have. So we don't know what will be normal. I think, you know, post-capitalism, perhaps, it'll all calm down.
Joy.
Yeah, I wanted to say, to come back to the comment that young girls these days are more sexually aware or liberated. A study was done in a school in Yorkshire, I think it was last year, over a few weeks, and they divided teenage girls from boys. The attitude of the teenage boys, because they were watching porn on the internet, was that women were so commodified, they were less than objects. It was astonishing, the vocabulary they used. I blush to repeat it, even I blush to repeat it. The girls took it totally for granted that the boys could do what they wanted. They had no say in it. And the boys said, oh, if we come on their face, they let us do it because of respect. The girl's attitude was that we let them do it because we respect them. It actually took my breath away. And they brought in a Belgian woman who was a sexologist to try and sort their attitudes out. It was over a period of weeks. And eventually put these boys and girls into separate workshops where they could say what they really thought. And the attitude, I saw Lorna looking at me a bit, I think you know what I'm talking about. I mean, it left me shocked, I thought I was unshockable. So the idea that these girls are more liberating, etc. The internet is the most pernicious thing.
When I was doing youth work, there was an absolute assumption that women have anal sex within
a absolutely, yeah, and that had no pubic hair. Yeah. Yeah. A normal woman has no pubic hair. Just, we've gone back to
Brian.
I always associate sex and religion, actually. In one way, sex and religion, because religion expresses itself in so many, many different ways, which I find sometimes very difficult to understand, you know, about that. But if you look cross-culturally at religion, the different expressions of religion are completely diverse. And it's the same with sex. I mean, sex in different cultures is expressed in very, very different ways. Some things that people get up to, I find really strange to understand. And myself, actually, like fisting, I mean, it really doesn't make much sense to me at all. But there are people that actually have sex with animals. It's quite a big movement, and they refer to themselves as theriophiles, you know? And they see themselves as loving animals, and so they have sex with animals. Which, again, it doesn't make much sense to me, actually, like that. But I think the main thing is actually what comes out of Mike's thing. It's not that we're really talking about sex, really. Actually, what we're talking about is exploitation and power relationships and things like that. We're talking about oppression. We're talking about the commodification of people. That's the issue around. You said the issue is around exploitation and power rather than just the sex. I mean, that's my feeling. And that's what I got out of your paper, really, that it's, you know, things are bad, not just because of the sex. It's like that people have been exploited and are into slavery and women are being abused. And that is the issues, really, rather than just sex. Whether you have like sex with animals or with a doll or whatever.
Well, you've got to get their consent, haven't you?
Yeah, well, that comes
out. Right. Anyone else? I think we need to...
So, if we are dealing with things in the present and now, rather than in a socialist society, perhaps we should be taking the fashion industry and the makeup industry to task
for accentuating sexuality and educating young people as to what they're doing when they're putting makeup on, that they're falsely accentuating sexual signals. And that might go a long way to solving a few problems of giving the wrong idea.
Okay, want to say anything in conclusion, Mike?
No, well, yeah. Oh,
sorry, it's Jim.
Just respond to that last comment.
Yes, go on.
This sort of assumes that men can't control themselves. The way women behave means that they're...
Hold on. Ian, let Jim say his piece and you can come back if you want. Jim.
What's wrong with a lot of men's attitudes, you know? It's the way women look, the way they dress, how they behave. It doesn't mean that they're sort of fair game.
I never said that.
It doesn't matter. You know?
I never said that. In actual fact, that's not what I said. What I said to you is that it should be explained to young people exactly what they're doing when they're reddening their lips,
Don't forget that men, the dandies,
used to make themselves up long before women did. Makeup comes from Max Factor.
Let me say the same for the boys.
Okay. If you know what it, do you want to?
Well, just because it's dafter. I mean, the point is, there's nothing. Why shouldn't people adorn themselves to be sexually attractive if they want? It's up to other people to respect that and respond to it in a reasonable way, and that's how we should all be. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, it may be true that the fashion industry sort of controls that in certain ways, and you might criticise that. But adornment in itself, people have always done that. People have done that throughout the ages, and going right back to some of those early hunter-gatherer times, and ever since. The thing that might be criticised would be the way that is tried to other people in power try to influence that in a particular direction. But there's no reason why people can't do that. Be daft, I think. Well, we all got to dress like the bloody Chinese mayoress in bloody, blue uniforms all the time, just to show we're equal and we respect each other. No, of course not.
Maggie, go on.
I've heard it from a number of young men about their dress. I should be able to wear whatever I like, and I will say, yes, you have the right. But if you go out dressed like that, you will attract attention, and some of it you won't want. So there's consequences for it.
Yeah,
all this, tarting your style. I'm sorry to use the language. Making yourself look extra sexually attractive, and which that is a thing we're encouraged to do. Well, not my age.
That's you too, are you?
That's
what I've
done. Something closer,
I think we could probably go on with this for a little while, but bearing in mind that lunch is at about half an hour's time, I think maybe, do you think we've had enough discussion on this, unless somebody really desperately wants to say something that hasn't already been said?
I'd like to say an enormous thank you to Mike again for organising this
weekend.
I just wanted to say that women in Africa and other gatherer societies walk around completely naked. They don't get raped every 5 minutes.
Okay. I think I'm going to draw it to a close now and thank you all for your contributions, and Mike in particular for the talk, and as Joy said, for everything he's done in connection with organising this weekend, which he has done for a number of years now, and hope he'll continue to do so into the future.
Thank you to everyone for coming along, and such a lively discussion today, and also yesterday and Friday as well. The talks are only really sort of part of summer school. The rest of the summer school is catching up with people, having a meal together, having drunken chats until 3 o'clock in the morning. It's sort of everyone who makes summer school. So thank you all for coming and making it a really great weekend.
Cheers. Thanks very much. Thanks.